The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, good morning. Shavuot Tov, how are you?
Boker Tov, Shavuot Tov. Yeah, we're going to be talking a bit about Corona and stuff like that. But the interesting thing for me today is this announcement that Israel is going to begin human trials next week from the Israel Institute of Biological Research in Nes Ziona. They've produced apparently 25,000 doses of a vaccine. They're starting a phase one trial. Phase one will involve 80 healthy volunteers. And then phase two will involve 960 volunteers. And when we eventually get to phase three, 30,000 volunteers will be involved. This vaccine, if everything goes to plan, will only be ready in about 12 months from now. So quite a long way behind some of the other vaccines that are already doing, already conducting clinical human trials around the world. But I think Israel is regarding this as something of an insurance policy because there are companies like AstraZeneca and Moderna whose vaccines will be ready sooner, but we're not sure that we will actually have access to their vaccines given the amount of pressure that there's going to be on production. So a step forward for Israeli vaccine. Next week, the human trials begin.
Unbelievable. Really, really interesting. But it's still not going so well with the Corona cabinet in Israel.
Well, no. And it's not going well with the political sphere in general, but the Corona cabinet has been particularly stormy. And I'm not really sure that we can honestly say that there's been any unanimity in the decisions that have been taken there. And yesterday was a classic example. Stormy debates went on for much of the day at the coronavirus cabinet. Eventually, there were some decisions that came out. The first of which is that first to fourth grade children will begin school again next week on the 1st of November. That's a very, very key moment. And the numbers of new infections have certainly been decreasing over time. So the evidence of the lockdown over Sukkot particularly seems to now be bearing fruition, bearing the fruits of the lockdown. And numbers are much lower. The number of people infected at the moment are much lower. All the numbers are going down. But nobody's kidding themselves that that's all good news that we've seen the back of it, because there are already active preparations for a lockdown sometime over Hanukkah, December, January time, with the expectation that as a result of this reopening, there's going to be another wave of new infections. And we've already seen, for example, with the kindergartens reopening a week or two ago, that already something like 30 or 40 kindergarten teachers have been infected through contact with children who've come to the schools. Schools have been closed down, children put into quarantine as a result of infections just through the kindergarten system. So next week, first and second graders will be studying 3 days a week in capsules starting from next week. And third and fourth grade children will study for a full week also in a capsule system. The problem, of course, in the schools is how does one really police that? And I know that in South Africa, they've somehow managed to be quite stringent about the rules. The Israeli schools are a little bit more difficult, not quite the same level of discipline involved, and children seemingly doing almost as they please. So it's going to be interesting to see whether this is going to be a successful move and whether children can get back to school. Whereas with the kindergarten children, sending them back to school was more about the parents, releasing the parents to go to work. Now we're in the stage of first to fourth graders where it is also about releasing the parents to go back to work. But these children actually need an education. And to be fair, last year was a very, very interrupted educational year, school year for the children. And this year hasn't really started for them. So it'll be good news to see them going back to school. Also, further businesses are due to open on the 1st of November. But the thing I really liked was the tourism ministry's initiative to try to define the city of Eilat and the Dead Sea area as so-called green tourism islands. And this was actually approved yesterday at the cabinet meeting. And the idea is that people, tourists, either Israeli tourists or even foreign tourists, can go along to the Dead Sea hotels or to the city of Eilat as tourists, as long as they have negative tests in their hand, recently undertaken to prove that they are not currently carriers of COVID-19. They will then be allowed to go and have their vacation Either at the Dead Sea or in Eilat. And this is a whole idea just to try to reopen the tourism industry a little bit to try and get those hotels opening. Apparently, these two areas, Eilat and the Dead Sea, house something like 30% of Israel's hotel rooms. So this is a very important move to try somehow to get the tourism industry back moving again and to allow those hotels to reopen with some level of safety. It's going to be interesting to see whether people adhere to the rules and whether they're really honest about the tests that get done and whether somehow we are successful in keeping corona away from those locations so people can really, first of all, have a good vacation away from the stress and strains of what we've been going through so far and also to try to reopen the economy a little bit.
The good news, at least, is that Israel and Sudan announced on Friday that ties between the two countries would be normalized. What does this mean practically?
We did talk about this, and you know, we were obviously expecting this announcement shortly at the last time that we spoke on Thursday. I don't know that I was expecting it quite on Friday, but it came as no surprise when it was announced. Lots of different reactions. Apparently, there was an element of the Sudanese population who decided this wasn't what they wanted, and they were protesting against it, burning Israeli flags in the streets. There was certainly a protest that we read about from Sudan. But it's interesting that a lot of the press statements around this newly established normalization are around immigration issues. And at the moment, Israel has something like 6,000 illegal Sudanese immigrants in the country, people who've made their way here by some form or another, mostly over foot through the desert in order to try to escape from Darfur and from other war regions, Nuba Mountains and other areas of Sudan to try and escape. And of course, word went out that Israel was welcoming. And all of a sudden, before we could sneeze, we had something like 10,000 Sudanese illegal immigrants in Israel. Something like 5,000 of those have already been repatriated and actually gone to other countries because at the time that this repatriation took place, Sudan and Israel didn't have any diplomatic relations. But now that these diplomatic relations have been reestablished, there is already work ongoing to try somehow to send back some of these Sudanese illegal immigrants from Israel to Sudan. So that's been dominating the news in terms of the renewal of diplomatic relations between the two countries. The other thing which I think was very positive was the Prime Minister announced that Israel will be sending $5 million worth of wheat to Sudan in a first act of friendship between the two countries. Of course, Israel can ill afford at the moment to be giving any freebies away to anybody, given that we're struggling to find enough budget to send our children to school. That was one of the comments that came out yesterday at the coronavirus cabinet, is that we don't have enough budget to reopen all of the schools as required in the capsules in order to protect everybody. And yet here we are sending $5 million worth of wheat to Sudan. It's a nice gesture. I don't know that we can necessarily afford it. And of course, $5 million is not a great deal in the overall scheme of things when we are, I think, needing something like 6 billion shekels in order to get all the children back to school. But it's a good gesture nonetheless. And of course, the idea is to somehow try to get some international trade going, some business, some agricultural and water technology exchanges. Apparently an Israeli delegation is due to visit Khartoum within the next few months, the next few weeks, I'm sorry, in order to discuss the further normalization of relations. And of course, as we mentioned on Thursday, it's just good news that Israel has more friends in the international community rather than enemies, and that's always going to be a good thing.
Absolutely. Do we see a, I mean, there's a lot of talk about companies, countries, I'm sorry, not companies, that will follow. Any confirmation around this?
A lot of speculation. I don't think we're going to see confirmation, but of course, talk around Saudi Arabia is rife. And that seems to be potentially the next country that could be on the list. Saudi Arabia is a lot more complicated. We've got the effective rule of Saudi Arabia. And he is making some negative comments, commonly known in the press as MBS, Mohammed bin Salam, I think his full name is, but he has made some relatively negative comments about the possibility of creating diplomatic relations between Saudi Arabia and Israel. And of course, there's a lot of speculation and a lot of controversy surrounding the possible sale of F-35s not only to the United Arab Emirates and Dubai, Bahrain, as we've seen in the press so far, but also the possibility of selling those planes by the United States to Saudi Arabia. That's also a highly controversial issue. But certainly when one looks at the countries that are being mentioned in the press, then Saudi Arabia is certainly top of that list. And I saw somewhere a suggestion that they might even come to the party and agree some sort of a normalization with Israel as soon as immediately after the U.S. elections, which is only in a couple of weeks' time.
Mm. Finally, Israel's Sephardi chief rabbi has denounced the wearing of wigs by women. Can we stop? What is this now?
I think, I mean, just a little bit of background to this. It's very customary for married women, those who wish to adhere to the halachot, to the rules, to the religious principles, to cover their heads. And many of them cover their heads wearing a wig in order to also make the head covering look attractive. And this has been a practice that's been ongoing for the longest time. I mean, you know, this is certainly something that's not very new at all. And within the Haredi community particularly, this has been a very, very popular practice, although it has been mostly common in the Ashkenazi Haredi community rather than the Sephardi Haredi community. But in the Sephardi community, it's become more popular in recent years, absolutely. And it's, you know, one sees it a lot. But however, during a lecture that Chief Rabbi of Israel, Rabbi Yosef, gave yesterday, he claimed that the hair that is being used to make these wigs is collected during so-called idolatrous rituals, and therefore he was very, very critical of using this hair, which was collected during these rituals, for the purpose of wearing wigs in order to maintain modesty for women. And the so-called idolatrous rituals apparently are in India, where a lot of this hair comes from, that apparently the hair is cut as part of some sort of a ritual in honor of some Hindu deity, Vishnu. And then once the hair has been cut, it is collected up and sent to Israel to make wigs for religious women to maintain modesty, to cover their heads. And so Rabbi Yosef has been very, very critical of this. He's discovered almost 100% for sure, according to his words, that that this is not kosher, that this is idolatrous, and that the collecting of this hair, because it's done in this way, should definitely not be used for the purpose of maintaining religious modesty by the Haredi community. What do you guys think? I mean, you know, this is all
You know what? My view is actually very, very simple. If the Sephardi chief rabbi of Israel doesn't believe that these wigs should be used, then he shouldn't use them and he should not wear it. I think that's really as simple as
well. He doesn't.
Well, at least he's true to his word, right?
Exactly. I mean, and he also invoked a ruling by Rabbi Mordechai Gross that was, ruled more than 10, 15 years ago, I don't know, that actually permits the wearing of these wigs. I mean, this has been the subject of halachic discussion apparently for some decades already. But yesterday was the moment when Rabbi Yosef thought that it was a good moment to say, no wig wearing, please. And so certainly you and I, Howard, we will stick to that for sure.
Certainly I will. It is 8 o'clock. Anthony Reich, thank you as always. We'll speak to you same time tomorrow.